Return with us to the HE Double Hockey Sticks adventure as we'd be having a heck of a time dishing the details from the devils here on another diabolic episode of Dead Men Roll No Crits. This is your Faustian contract dealing and fiddle dueling DM Patrick here, and racing down to the crossroads of Georgia and other parts of the country. With me are my four friends and your players, Jabert, Rebecca, Seth, and Tyler.
I'm hanging out here in the home for infinite losers.
Oh, yes. I got it.
Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama.
Ah, okay. Hey, Patrick, how are you?
Good. I'm doing pretty well. You're not heading down to Georgia, but you're heading down south towards Rebecca.
Very close to Georgia.
Yeah,
right.
I'm heading down to Carolina, and I'm looking for a mine to bop to borrow. And
sweet dreams and flying machines and pieces on the. I hope your flying machine isn't in pieces on the ground.
What
are you riding in a Boeing or?
What zip code are you going there, and what time will you arrive?
Wait a minute.
Also, your social security number, just in case. Yeah. You guys sick of fighting devils? I don't know.
Oh my god.
I don't want to tell you. It's been a devil month or so, month or two.
Oz doesn't mind so much.
A lot of deviling.
I'm all for it. Let's keep. You know what? Let's make us just. Why don't we just visit some other planes of existence instead of doing whatever it is that Patrick has laboriously prepared?
Ichi double hockey sticks. The plane of heck.
The heck plane of oh gosh. the plane of wait, you don't look like St. Peter.
You know, I should go to the Sodden Wastelands because I've been watching Fallout.
Oh yeah.
I actually just finished it. I just finished it earlier today with the husband.
No spoilers. We have two episodes left.
Drew and I finished it already.
I thought it was really bold to have a character in the show end up being the Fallout. That was really.
Turns out I am the Fallout.
That's the last line of season one.
That's gonna make
the
some
Fallout all along.
That's gonna make some fans really upset. Oh, okay, here comes this brand new character, and oh, that's the Fallout. It turns out all along.
Where in the books and the audio dramas, the Fallout was another character completely and someone else.
I know.
They just ignored that part. They decanonized that part.
It's called Legacy now or something, you know.
Yeah.
Used to be the Fallout expanded universe.
Man, I'm ready for them to remaster the first and second Fallout game.
I don't know if I am. I think we should just leave them the heck alone.
Oh, they're so good.
But I know, which is why we should leave them alone.
No, they're also like 27 years old at this point, and
correct.
I would love to see a nice coat of paint.
The people who made those games what they were are not present anymore. There's not a team that can appropriately handle those two games.
Well, not the current owners, probably.
No, exactly. So we had Fallout 3, which was a bloated mess. And then we had Fallout New Vegas by Black Isle, which they were like, people played that and they're like, oh yeah, this is the people that should be making Fallout. And then they vanished.
Yeah.
And we got Fallout 4, which
no.
I don't know, people have their own opinions about it, but I thought Fallout 4 was pretty bad overall.
It's okay. I think I like it more than 3, but yeah.
Sure, 3 is a pretty low bar.
Yeah, I was about to say. Either, regardless, those soundtracks bop, and every time those songs showed up in the show, I was like, yes.
Those aren't Fallout songs, though.
I know, but they were added to the Fallout universe for the games.
The I don't want to set your world on fire song. Yeah. I literally just sing that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll just pop into my head, and I'll sing the whole thing, and it's one of my favorites.
You know, one that pops into my head a lot is Maybe, despite the fact that it's like peak 50s crooner negging. It's such a spiteful song. It's so mean.
Oh, yeah.
Literally, it's Maybe mean? You'll think of me when you're alone, because that guy you're running off with, he's going to abandon you, and then you'll be like, oh, man, I wish I stayed with that guy.
And then
you gotta think it.
Bongo, bongo, bongo. I don't want to leave the Congo.
Oh my gosh.
That's pretty upsetting. Yeah.
It's so bad, but so good.
It was out of my head. It was literally gone until you just resummoned.
Oh, no. Sorry. Oh. Bongo, bongo, bongo. I'm so happy in the jungle. I refuse to go.
Oh, all no. Right.
We'll start the Fallout RPG after we finish this campaign. That's just quick jaunt, quick 4-year campaign. Boy. Or whatever it's been.
VATS and TTRPG.
Are you guys ready to get back into this week's episode of Pirates, right? We're playing Pirates?
Mm-hmm.
Not Devil Hunters?
Pirates, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it depends.
Not
on
Demon
you
Slayer?
Ask.
Yeah, Pirates? Question mark or asterisk? When we last left off, indeed, a fell wind had fallen over the
Ew.
Bay of Hell Harbor, whose name escapes me, but it's probably something pretty cool.
Hell Harbor Bay.
The Infernal Inlet.
The Diabolic Inlet.
Yeah. And remastered it is diabolic. Yeah, the Chelish command vessel of Abigail's Fury has been pelted with the smell of fire and brimstone here as Admiral Drevalia Thrun has crumpled to the ground, a sprawling, shining wizard bringing her down. Her face is broken, it's bleeding. She's missing a very prominent front tooth, her once pristine naval uniform. She's not wearing armor, by the way. Just got on her official naval uniform, just clothing. It is singed and ripped and torn up in places. She raises a hand up to kind of clutch at you, Honto. You're right in front of her, but it doesn't look like she's able to see you. She's just, you know, patting in front of you and pleading. And she says, "Kill me, Kandoso. Please kill me."
I don't know if Kandoso can hear that. Where is that?
I don't think you were that far away. Just take a peek.
That's a cutscene, so everybody hears her say it. So
you went down a deck, but you can easily come back up to the top. Or maybe she fell down the stairs. Maybe that's what happened. Because she was right at the top of the stairs when the...
It's really embarrassing.
People's Knee of Justice found her.
One of her buckles got caught around Honto's ankle, and he just dragged her down with him. He went down. And he said, "Oh, geez, I got something stuck on my foot.
Kill me."
If I got any good spells for this.
Mm-hmm.
Any good target spells?
All out of spells.
Tempest Surge.
I could cast Storm of Vengeance, the one that you were so haughty about before. You were just like, "No, poo, poo, poo. I don't want Storm of Vengeance. That's not a good level 9 spell."
I just didn't want to slow down any of last week's episode. Didn't turn out super long, I don't think. I was worried it was gonna be like a 3-hour affair, but we snuck it in under an hour and a half, if you can believe that.
we started plugging people. That's why.
I'm gonna walk over to her and take her by the hair at the nape of her neck. And I spit the words into her face and I say, "I will do what my captain commands." And I cast Stabilize. You'll get out that quick. You'll get out that easy.
And also, you can taste the sweet fruit of vengeance. Just do it. Just cleave the soul from my rotting corpse. Slay me. And also, it is your right. At this point, you notice that a very large hole has appeared in the deck of the ship.
Well, that's not ideal. That's not what you want in the deck of a ship.
No. I think I kind of drew maybe like a giant rift appearing as boards kind of begin to shatter. And you see from below deck what looks like a red light and a blast of heat emanating forth, outward and upward and forth. She says, "No, please, you must kill me. You can't do this. It's not fair. Kill me. Kill me, Kandoso. Kill me right now."
Oh, is someone coming to collect a contract?
Yeah. I say, "You've made your deals, Drevalia. I will not
break you from them. Goodbye.
She
cast her into the pit. I wait for the pit to gobble her up like a nim 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 morsel. Nim 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 nim.
She like takes her +3 dagger out and tries to stab herself, and it just keeps bouncing off her level 0 clothing.
Oh no!
But she's you know at 0 hit point. She's
I was gonna be like, oh, is that a +3 dagger? And he's gonna take it.
Oh, you should start sliding the runes onto a rune plate. You're like, I'll be taking those real quick. Hold on. No, indeed. You hear a devilish voice calling out from said pit. I'll try to do my best.
Our fates entwined. Your time to die.
This hole cracks open a little further as an unbearably hot wind blows through. It's fairly cold early morn here in Hell Harbor, whereas it seems like the rest of the battlefield kind of continues on, but time almost begins to freeze here on Abigail's Fury as the ship is bathed in both an unnatural darkness, as if you were plunged into an eclipse, but also an unbearable bright red light that seems to emanate forth from this chasm. A very large creature, maybe 12 feet tall, kind of floats upward until there's enough room for it to spread forth leathery wings, which unfurl, and you see a red-faced devil, both draconic and bat-like wings on its back, two very thick horns coming from its head, and a fairly wicked grin. It lands on the top deck and has a little bit of a pep in his step, kind of like moves over beside Thrune, doesn't really pay attention to anyone else here on the top deck, and says,
Poor little Thrune, you know well the price of breaking our deal. You're mine now, until I tire of you.
Dravalia, maddened by this, you see only whites in her eyes as they go wide, and she begins to crawl away as this devil grabs an ankle and tears flowing down her broken face. You see her nails cracking as she attempts to dig into the wooden deck of the ship. She looks once more in the direction that you were, Gandoso, and this time is like, please, Gandoso, please kill me. Please.
I don't want to take off an evil god or whatever, or a devil or whatever. You know, I wouldn't want to upset a devil.
Yeah, be pretty bad enemy for you to make angry. And
you wouldn't download a demon.
You wouldn't. That's right.
You wouldn't get straight up devilish and steal a. This is
and take a dump in his helmet and send it to his mom.
Your characters,
unless it's Belphegor,
characters might not know what this is, but I can tell you this is a tyrant devil, a pit fiend, one of the kind of founts of hell, the nexus, the ninth layer of hell.
Well, unless the dice are extremely uncooperative, I would say Oz would probably know exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's not great that it is here right now. It's not a good thing that this is happening, but yeah.
Something like this is responsible for the last 8 generations of his having cursed blood, so, you know.
Mm-hmm. Does Ozzy want to interject anything? Do you want to chat him up? Or I should also mention, by the way, that while this thing has appeared, the Demaviga and the remaining Ice Devil have dropped to their knees.
Sure.
Just drop straight down and genuflecting and cowering a little bit.
I don't know if he would have anything to say. He doesn't know who this lady is.
Well, I mean, you do, in at least the fact you know this is the Admiral of the Chilish Navy.
Yeah. But the thing is that whatever transaction is happening here is obviously going to be kind of in our favor. I don't see
you gotta let nature take its course. You can't interrupt it.
And
deer's dying in the forest. That's what was meant to be.
And thinking practically, like whatever she's going to be subjected to, in his view, is probably better than cursing your family bloodline.
I don't know. I've got this next paragraph I got written is pretty spicy, Seth. It's it's pushing that PG-13.
Say we're PG-13, Patrick. So I mean,
this devil kind of just picks her up in one hand by the head, claws digging into her flesh, and says, "It's too late for death's release now. Dead or alive, your soul is mine." She's like trying to pull the fingers out of her skull, but in a very quick motion with his two hands, as if he was holding but a sheet of paper, he proceeds to rip Drevalia Thrun in half down the center. Her screams as this happens being silenced by the sound of blood filling her growing cavities of her body as she is ripped in twain, split in half.
Okay.
No one here has seen it, but it's spoiler warning. Something like this happens in the Black Adam movie, of all places.
My. Oh, really?
It caught me. Well, yeah. It caught me so off guard.
He did it to the mailman.
It feels like that was marketed as a children's movie.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson ripped his mailman in half in that movie.
Yeah, it was completely unexpected. It wasn't even a bad guy.
No, watch the scene, and I was like, oh, wow. They really did that, huh?
Two bifurcations in film. One was the original Leprechaun remake, where a man gets bifurcated by a solar panel.
Being cut in half is so different, but being... Yeah. Worn in half. Ugh.
And then the second one was the first Terrifier movie.
Terrifier. That was awful.
That is a brutal scene, and the closest thing I can think of coming to this, maybe a little bit worse than this.
Something similar happens in the first Silent Hill movie.
Mm-hmm.
Pyramid Head removes someone's skin and throws her skin against the church door.
Oh, brutal.
Jabir, you remember her, but my girlfriend at the time, we saw that in theater, and she like walked out at the end. She's, no, F that movie. I was like, okay, fair enough. It's pretty rough. It's pretty rough, but
pretty So she gets ripped in half, and does he like go back in the pit with her like after that, or is he just hanging out?
He looks very bored after that. He's and just kind of like throws the two halves of the body in the pit and kind of wipes his hands on his chest.
Quip out loud because he can't help himself, but he's not really saying it to anybody. He's like, he might just say, oh, I guess once you ripped 1,000 people in half, it just doesn't hit the same, eh?
He suddenly becomes,
I think Oz standing just right by him and just gonna be like, sucks.
Suddenly he becomes very aware that you all are here as well. It says, I have perhaps some business still on this craft. But do you all? Maybe it's time that you showed yourself away from this place. You realize that he is talking to the Demaviga and the Ice Devil, who begin to march towards the hole as well, as fire and flames begin to shoot out of all the holds here.
I start to march away from the hole.
That's possible. Oh, don't go into the hole. I don't have anything written for you go into the hole. It's not a good time, but yes.
That is right. You all should flee. Flee from here. Unless one of you wishes to make a bargain as well. I have in my power still the ability to make you powerful, make you rich. I can give whatever it is you so desire.
Oz is going to turn around, his back facing the pit, and he's going to like point at people and say, I recommend against it severely.
Yeah, I will venture a word and say, Devil, you have given me what I desire already.
You have defeated that which caused you the most harm, but you do not know the full story, do you? For she did not work alone. There are more snakes in the grass, whose names I might still be willing to offer. Names of those who emboldened through. All I ask is that you also dispatch them and perhaps call forth for my name when is their time to die.
Snap.
You all seem to be locked in battle here with the forces dedicated to my dark lord. For a price, I will give you an edge here in this battle, trading pain for pain, pleasure for pleasure, and whomsoever wants to dedicate a debt to me, then please do. All that is required is a simple promise, a keepsake of your soul if you fail to deliver your promises like she did.
The devil kind of looks in Mr. Bartleby's direction and maybe makes a gesture of maybe shakes his finger or I don't know what it's not a wristwatch gesture, but like perhaps moves over to the edge of the deck where there's a sand timer, like a good hour sand timer, and just like flips it back over while looking at you.
What?
Bartleby? She was trying to kill Bartleby for some nefarious reason.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
She really wanted you dead.
Yeah. I mean, that would be good to know. Wait, but so this guy's looking at Bartleby like he wants Bartleby? Is that what you're saying?
He doesn't seem super interested in you right now, but maybe makes indeed gestures saying
his wrist sundial.
You foiled me? Yeah, just turns his wrist upside down. The timer goes all dark.
Then Bartleby will indeed step forward and say, "Devil, tell me, what business have you with me? Why have your servants come wandering into this, wandering after me? What possibly could I have that they would want?"
"I attracted this one to wipe from existence all those who wish to challenge my dark lord as dominators of death in her realm. And she went to the edges of the earth to find one stolen away from that temple and was unable, even here, when she had you in her grasp, to finish the job. You have been given more time, and I suggest you use it to go far, far away from here, to hide yourself and wait, for you have cheated death once more, Mr. Bartleby, but you will not be able to forever."
"The lady will have me when she wishes." And I make a holy symbol of Phrasma, which is not probably not all that upsetting to devils. It's,
"Thanks for not letting me die again."
It's like a little squirrel. Yeah.
The devil kind of looks maybe equally in the direction of Alaris, Honto, and Cassius. Do either of you make eye contact? Are you willing to return his gaze?
I mean, yeah, Cassius is fine.
I think Honto is not fine, but he is staring. Like
Alaris is going to avert her gaze. Very uncomfortable.
I think Honto sees it as a personal challenge to not flinch in the presence of a creature like this.
"Iruxi, there is one who yet lives, who has wounded you greater than you can know. If you make a deal with me, I will tell you the name of who is responsible for the death of your Topeu. Let you know more still when you pull the still beating heart from the chest of that one and serve it to me." "What say you?"
"This is not knowledge I had before. And I see no need to trouble myself with worry or desire or vengeance. My life has been plenty complicated already. I'm ready for that to stop."
It walks past Alaris, just kind of chuckling evilly. It moves right on to Cassius, obvious, and says,
You know the name of the pirate I seek in order to repay what you might owe, but I do not think you know how much you will have to sacrifice in order to bring him down. But if you drive a blade through his heart and call my name, I will do the rest and consider our deal done. Cassius, say you?
You know, I imagine Cassius is kind of flying up, and you know, so they're kind of looking face to face.
No, I'm pretty sure Gandoso cast that spell.
No.
Oh, no. I'm
pretty sure he locked down the ship. No. No, you're yeah. There's a hot wind that's keeping you from flying away from the ship right now. In fact,
I don't like the phrase hot wind.
Mm-hmm. It's pungent too. Ooh, it's stanky.
Cedarwood?
Yeah, that's what it smells like. No way. I made some egg salad yesterday and I opened up my fridge today. And I was like, no. Oh, gosh. Oh, HE double hockey sticks. What say you, Tyler?
Well, in order for me to do that, mate, I'd have to know your name.
All you ever need to call on my aid if you desire my services. Speak aloud, Eris Omandius, and I will be ready to give you a bargain.
Guys should look out for people named Sephiroth.
Yeah, right.
Be right now, though, and I will call off the legions of hell who attack your friends on other ships. I will call them all back, and many will live because of your sacrifice.
What's the cost? I didn't hear that part.
Pretty much, you gotta kill someone. He said, "You know who that would be," and offer up their heart when they're dying.
What do you get out of the heart?
You know, it's pretty tasty.
Oz.
I imagine that's just an audience member that just shouted from the.
No, it's Oz. He's like, "What do you get out of the heart?"
Okay.
Yeah, he's gonna. Yeah, that's. That wasn't me just being me. That was me in character.
Okay. I think that's the only way for pit fiends to continue to level up is they need to eat like vengeance soaked tarts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jilted hearts.
Does the pit fiend ignore him?
Yeah, I mean he's pretty much like locked in on Cassius.
I was gonna say Oz turns his head to Cassius. What does he get from the heart?
The one guard who's got 10 HP, the Chelish guard is like, shut up, you fool. Don't bring his attention over here.
One of the daughters is alive. Yay.
What's her name?
She's alive. Oh,
wow.
She gets up and provokes an attack of opportunity and gets swatted to the deck.
Oh, so close. So close. I assume that the subtext here is that if I were to fail to do this, Soul Time be bye bye. Kind of wonder.
So, oh yes, he will likely, when you're dying, come and rip you in half and probably eat more than your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably eat your butt too.
Define the terms.
We'll get out paper and pen later. Quill.
Yeah.
Later. Quill and ink. I have two sections for moving forward. One says if a deal is made, another if no deal is made. You know, there's story consequences, obviously, but well, I mean, maybe Eris Omandius will come back if you mess things up really badly.
Oh man, this is a hard one.
Doesn't have to be you. I got deals on the table with Honto and Candoso right now. Alaris is ducking away, so she hasn't even heard her terms.
Alaris puts her hood on over her head and goes invisible.
Oh yeah, he definitely can't see invisibility. You're good. You're good.
Yeah.
Do you start listening to your Walkman?
Cassius says, "Call off your minions, and I'll give you the heart of the man you need."
As you say that, he reaches his arm forward and kind of grabs you, maybe drags you down in a large clawed forearm embrace, just like reaches forward. His eyes lock with yours, and you see a massive kind of black hole of negative energy appear in the skies above Hell Harbor as the darkness lightens and returns to a early morning patch of gray sky. And you watch as devils of all shapes and sizes seem to be sucked into this black miasma, perhaps a quarter mile above Hell Harbor, as what looks like an unseen whirlwind is blowing them away. They seem to be struggling to kind of fly against the pull of this pit of darkness. Arismondius is smiling the entire time as he's locked eyes with you. He's completely unmoving, but you realize he's not here anymore as his entire form turns rigid and his mass kind of converts into that of hot coals and crackling embers as little pieces of him begin to crumble away, his horns first breaking off and tumbling to the deck of the ship. And then his entire arm breaks off in your hand and starts, it smells like barbecue as parts that burn through your clothing and hit your flesh. But you hear his little snickering kind of haunted house laugh follow you as he makes his exit, just the devil's,
we got that going for us.
Yeah, the devils on the board the ship here also kind of float away. I think this one, the Dim Vega, just kind of collapses. its armor dropping to the ground here.
But, no, chair! Not chair! It was this podcast favorite!
But yeah, the ship is completely disabled as you see it. It's beginning to take on water here. And the few crew that were alive downstairs are massively trying to bail her out and patch holes.
Where's the wood barrel on this ship?
The wood barrel?
Sea of Thieves reference.
Sea of Thieves thing.
What goes in the wood barrel?
Wood. Plates of wood, which you used to
walked right in that one. Right, so the battle is not won as the battle for Hell Harbor still rages, but there are no commands being issued forth from Abigail's Fury. So you see the line that was holding back Tessa Fairwind's reinforcements kind of breaks at one point and begins to sail into the harbor, but seeing that perhaps there are great bouts of flame coming off of Abigail's Fury, begins to move north, kind of back towards the Eye of Abednego. The ships that are still engaged in combat with Aranax and Demian's forces and were looting Hell Harbor begin to form a retreat as well, moving away from the harbor. So about half the vessels move off as pirate ships go and begin raiding the remainder here. This is a fairly long process that happens over the course of the next few hours here, but back aboard the Abigail's Fury, you all can take stock of no one died. No one went down, but we had a few folks that were very close. I think Sharga maybe was the closest. You went down a couple.
I don't know. Times. Was pretty close.
I was at 25 hit points.
Breath of life.
34 was with Alaris, so both were pretty close.
I think Bartleby was at 24 hit points. It was pretty close. Pretty close.
Ooh. May I suggest next time flying up to one of the yard arms off the mainmast. Yeah. Kovic had 218 hit points left. it's safe Kovic up there when you're being a wussy.
Kovic could have. You have a sword. You could have been down here taking out guards as well. But here we go. And that's
he was just too busy giving people a bath. A little bath.
Yeah.
Arrow bath.
Flash damage forever.
Bolt bath, Patrick. Bolt bath.
I don't know. Kovic saved Alaris. He killed two guards that were surrounding her. So,
and from what I understand, the acid is exfoliating. So,
yeah, it didn't hurt her that much. It's fine.
Yeah, you're taking care of those guards by yourself, I'm pretty sure. But he did hasten their demise.
And now Alaris has the freshest layer of skin.
You guys can rejoin one another and check wounds here, but you see the Master of Gales kind of move forward to the faux castles, you know, in chains, and says, "Oh, would anyone mind helping a man out of his robes and chains?"
I'll help him out of his chains. I'm going to leave him in his robes, but...
Collapses. He says, "No, my boy, thank you, Gandoso. Your command of the lightning is unmatched. I am sorry I could not help you defeat her, but... No, I need you to take the robes off me. I cannot do it myself."
All right, I do take the robes off of him. If you really clarify, as no, I want my butt.
No,
son,
I got underwear on. Please, I swear.
Okay,
he doesn't. Well, he lied.
All right, I take his underwear off. No. Oh no, there's no underwear.
Hold on a moment.
No, as you disrobe him, you see. I mean, he's just covered in his own waste, dirt, and
oh, gosh,
matted blood. But as you take the robes off him, you feel his mystic aura returning as this great crashing wave of primal energy.
Yeah.
Just smacks you in the face. He looks very pleased. It looks like he was holding in his breath almost. And he says, Oh. Looking over these robes, indeed, they seem to be magical vestments of some sort that seem to rob him of his power.
Oh, we gotta hold on to those.
Must be I don't know. Yeah, I think you can just do that with just like metal. With the druids, you could just be like, "Quick, put on this armor." My powers.
My connection to nature.
That's all it took.
My one weakness.
So wait, if I shoot a druid with a metal bullet and it stays in them?
No, it's, but I can't use like metal shields, for example.
Okay. So if I shoot him with a shield, if I had a gun that shot shields.
If you glue a shield to a druid, a metal shield to a druid, you're going to want, Patrick, you're gonna want some sovereign glue.
Let's rewrap this podcast. I got a
druid.
Let's hold the Candoso down and put him in a suit of full plate. Come on. Let's weld it onto him.
You'll never stop me. I'll get out one day.
I forget what they were called. Indeed, this is something that from the first edition version of the Pathfinder AP, what was said to be how they've kind of tamed him and took him hostage. Say, Robe of Powerlessness.
Ooh,
is the first edition item. I don't think there's an official second edition version of it. Zero search results on Archive of Nethys. But the first edition version was, yeah, I mean, basically what it sounds like. Put these on. It's, hey, you know those powers that you enjoyed? No. No, you don't get those. I think it works for any magical kind of class.
Now, when you say robe.
Oh, but also it takes a minus 10 penalty to strength, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. So it works for a lot of folks.
Well, I really want to stretch. I want to really experiment with the space that is wearing the robe. If someone's asleep in their hammock on the ship and I drape them in this, is that wearing? Does it work? Because if so.
I think since it lowers your strength, it probably feels like a weighted blanket. You're like, oh gosh, this heavy robe is so heavy. Why can't I lift it?
Hold on a moment. Hold on.
Uh-oh. Looking something up.
Oz has 10 strength exactly.
Oh no.
It just knocks you unconscious the second you put him on.
You put that on him, he literally does not have motive capability. I am fairly certain.
We all look on, we're like, boy, that must be a pretty comfortable robe, huh?
he's just walking along, wow, and you drop the robe on him and he just hits the ground with a loud thud and it just immediately stops moving.
Hold this for a second.
They thought you were a chair, so they just threw it over you. That's the devil. No, Master of the Gales will continue and kind of get up, and you see he's like a very kind of frail old man with a pot belly. But he says,
"Oh, my staff, did you happen to get it back from Thrun?"
Oh,
you see, you look over and Cassius is trying to stuff the staff into one of his sleeves.
Wait a minute.
Did I put it in your loot pile?
You didn't put it in the loot table.
You did not, but I remember her having it.
Yeah, she did. I remember her having a staff. I didn't specifically take it from her before she was...
Oh, no.
Inexplicitly. Was she holding on to it
when she got ripped in half and thrown in the pit?
No. Oh, no. She definitely dropped it as she...
Honto's using it as a fishing rod for some reason. It's like, do-do-do. No.
A couple things I didn't give you here. It is a greater staff of air.
Ooh.
Sure.
Oh, well, it's like one of those staffs that you buy, but major. Like the inside is 60% air. Hate that.
As you hand it back to him, Kando, so he kind of uses it to prop himself up for a moment and lean on the rail of the ship, but then pushes it right back into your hands and says,
"Oh, I'm getting too old to continue to sail these waters. If some devil worshipping harlot can disarm me and sack my city, would you mind holding on to this Gandoso for me?"
I will keep it safe for you. Now I'll put it to good use.
It's only like a level 12 magic staff, but it's got a lot of character. It's like a big old knotted wood here.
It casts lightning bolt. That's all I needed to do.
Dravalia's necklace did fall off of her when she was ripped in twain. It can be fixed as a small magic necklace. We didn't talk too much about some of the other magic items that they had on them, but most of it was on Valeria Asperixis, who had on runed plate mail armor. Had resilient +2 greater resilient full plate armor, and also had the +3 Gloom Blade that she was using. Raider Striking Gloom Blade. You know, this is indeed a huge honor, Kando. So, he's literally handing over kind of some pretty important responsibilities, I think, along with the staff. This has been, he's held basically all the sea meetings for druidic folk in these parts for longer than you've been alive, Master of Gales.
Nothing. I have nothing. But yeah, I agree. It's a big deal. And I like it. But I'm going to hold this staff and I'm going to put my other ones in my back pocket.
It's a very large back pocket.
It's extremely large. It's very.
It's the same place all Final Fantasy characters keep their weapons when they're not in combat.
That's why when I walk around, I walk without bending my legs.
You just have a giant bundle of wood on your back, all these walking sticks.
That's why his reflex save has a slight negative to it.
A bit.
Yeah, the battle for Hell Harbor winds down over the next few hours, and the luck of the draw eventually comes over to you guys and picks you up off of Abergale's Fury and returns you to the Tidebreaker, the Spider Silk, which has taken some damage from some other devil attacks in your stead. He's now known as Mahim the Devil Death Dealer. Because he killed one devil in this fight. One like little teeny fiend.
And it was a kill steal. It wasn't even...
It was like a little imp climbed on board.
Yeah, he just kind of...
Scrimshaw Jack in. Stabbed it 8 times and he came in and was like, "Head chop off, go!"
We need to give Mahim like a Daenerys style of title chain. It's just the title of every enemy he's beaten in combat.
I'll solidify that.
I'm not listening to 180 episodes to make that list again on our next playthrough. We'll keep a running tally. So
okay.
Jabert and I remaster comes out.
Play through Skull and Shackles about every 10 years or so. So we're due for another one pretty soon, right? Now, when did we play? It was longer ago than that, I think. Maybe 13 years ago we played Skull and Shackles.
I don't want to think about how old I am right now.
It's so funny. We're getting to the end of this campaign. We're getting to the end of our Agents of Edgewatch game. We've played so much Pathfinder. so much. Right. The battle is eventually won as about half of this Chelish navy beats a hasty retreat north to the Eye of Abendego, perhaps back to like international waters on the outside of the storm to maybe return home to Cheliax, maybe to kind of regroup and see if they can salvage this campaign. But the pirates in Hell Harbor do declare this a victory, and eventually you are brought to find a nearly dead Aranax Endymion on board the Luck of the Draw, missing like an eye and his arm like in a sling. It looks like it's been slashed to shreds, and he comes over and gives you all a hearty handshake, saying thank you all for coming to Hell Harbor. We would have been dancing above the gallows at this time if you all hadn't done what you did.
I mean, you guys have a tough place to defend in the Shackles. And, well, I just couldn't stand to see us lose territory piece by piece to those folk.
With Drenchport to the west fallen, it will be quite hard to keep Hell Harbor safe, keep it away from the clutches of Cheliax. But I am up for the task. What does not kill me will make me stronger than any of those who sail under the flag of the devil. Tessa kind of directs her doctors, her ship's surgeons and whatnot to get to work on him. And say, okay, all right, calm down. We don't need to go into hysterics here. The battle is won for today. Let us put out some fires and drown our wounds in alcohol, for we have survived, they have not. Those who fell are not having to worry about anything this evening.
Most usually the case.
Yeah, most of Hell Harbor and the city here is still intact. There are a number of fires that are getting put out as you guys step into the city, but we can fast forward through some piratical partying to you all having survived the battle here, the sea battle. Didn't have to do sailing ship combat again, even though maybe you would have traded one of those rounds of combat for some quick hexagonal combat. Is that what
we're I'm doing? Happy hexagonal. With I'm happy with the legendary turn order size that we received.
I don't know if we're doing that again. I don't know.
Oh, no, that's Patrick.
This is reverse psychology.
Can we make a
C-team
so that we can do a 12?
No, if anything, we'll be like, maybe something causes B-team to attack A-team. Let's have an 8-person combat and see who wins. Who does
you're gonna
win
turn this?
That?
You're going to turn this into Highlander rules at the end?
Oh, I don't know. No, that will be a bonus episode. We'll be like, which team is stronger? And I think it's pretty even. I don't know. You got spellcasters on both. You got a couple big beefy folks in both.
Yeah. I mean, whichever team Bartleby on is the winner.
Oh, yeah. You got
Bartleby with the clutch healing. And honestly, I feel like as Thaumaturge, Oz has become a bit of a beater, actually, at this point. I've been very surprised at the damage that he's cranked out in recent episodes.
Kovic's a little scary as well.
And nobody needs to even mention Sharga. So, like.
What about Sharga against Kovic, Ozzy, and Bartleby?
We did find Sharga's weak point, which is trip. Just keep tripping. Just keep tripping. Just you have to take a lot of. You have to take some feats and some. Yeah, have to have some weapons. You got to specialize a little bit. But
if you trip her, she can't whirlwind strike eight.
She
people.
Can't whirlwind strike.
Say,
so
we
keep
didn't really
her on
get
the
into this. But when she was tripped, shouldn't she have potentially fallen on one of the people adjacent to her? That could have been a fun mechanic.
Just squished. Yeah.
Just roll a d8 and see which cardinal direction she falls into.
See who gets pushed?
Like. It was mostly your allies around you.
Yeah,
I know, which is why I'm glad I didn't mention it at the time, but in the future it could be fun.
Oh, what a great idea. Oh,
one extra d6 of damage? That's good.
I was just like, I'm thinking about like Trip fighting, and I just have an image of like low level, not that there's a lot of high level Mortal Kombat play, but you know, just like somebody just crouching and doing the sweep kick over and over again. Somebody gets up, there's a thump, thump, thump. It's like, stop it.
He's a master. Look at him. Look at him go.
Let's see. What am I going to sweep kick?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know.
Look, he's like... playing. He's playing as Blanca, and he's just doing that electricity thing over and over and over again. It's amazing. That's some high level play.
I don't know why Trip isn't like more of a thing in Pathfinder 2E. It seemed to be a very important mechanic in first edition combat. Maybe because you're only taking away like one of their actions.
It doesn't give you as much of a benefit as it used to have.
Yeah, I mean, they're both flat-footed or off-guard.
It was +4 in first edition if you're standing above a tripped opponent.
Yeah,
true. This one does
and
have...
everyone had attacks of opportunity and, you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It would always trigger when you stood up and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, tripping was absolutely brutal in first edition, and it was easier to do.
I'll just stay down here. That's fine. I'll stay down.
I live on the ground now.
I mean, because you also didn't have like the same crit rule, so you're just like, I mean, like I'll probably just get hit down here, so it's fine. Like I was gonna get a hit up there too. So
but now it's like, you're gonna get a crit if you stay down there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Now like you kind of need to get back up.
Right. If you guys are okay with it, we will talk about the divvying up of treasure and thing off air, because obviously the captured and downed Chelish specials are worth a lot of gold doubloons. They also had on them several months, almost an entire year's worth of payments in blood rubies and black sapphires. There's like just crates and crates of these very expensive gems here. It seemed like indeed they were ready to set up like a colony or something, perhaps with goods, ill-gotten goods.
Touchdowns. Do you guys take blood rubies? No, sorry. You need to give a Suica card.
Those foolish douchebags.
There are monies now. But yeah, I've gotten to the magic items here. But we will fast forward just a few days after perhaps looking around for places to repair all of the ships in the Armada. Indeed, some of Aranax and Demion's ships that survived. We see a fleet of ships sailing for Port Peril. And as you all return there, the victors, having vanquished the Chelish back north to the Hurricane, you see many ships, those of the Hurricane King and fellow lords seem to have, they all seem to be running the Hurricane King's flag above their sails. They seem to be barricading Jeopardy Bay, walling off the Port Peril from attack, fanned out in a pattern that would make it nearly impossible to enter without running into some of these vessels. And as you sail kind of on the edge of this, the Luck of the Draw receives a message from the mainland, and Tessa Fairwind's ships pulls up alongside the Tidebreaker. She lets over a plank and perhaps calls for Alaris on the Spider Silk as well to have a private powwow. She brings over like a giant satchel with her. And on the Luck of the Draw, she brings you into her captain's cabin and throws the bag on the table as she moves over towards the sidebar. And Tessa says, "Well, the cat's out of the bag and the puss is in the boots, running for the hills. Congratulations, Cassius and crew. We've all just been made outlaws."
Oh, no, I feel really bad about that. It cuts me deep.
On the table, spilling out of her bag, is a collection of scrolls and what looks like posters and things. You see a numbers of writs of excommunication. There's some drawings with your likenesses underneath, you know, like wanted style posters with gold doubloon rewards promised for live capture. Tessa says, the Hurricane King's gone off his rocker. He gave a proclamation after we left Fort Peril that every lord who did not defend Jeopardy Bay would be branded a traitor to the crown at best, and a chelish collaborator at worst. And he stripped us of our lordships, torn up our letters of mark, and taken the seats on the Pirate Council from us. So from this moment on, it looks like you and I are just regular sailors once more.
Wait, so I'm no longer a pirate lord.
You're an ex-pirate lord, if anything. You're just Honto.
I'm all right with this.
Was that your favorite piece of legislation ever passed by the Hurricane King?
You know what? I'm actually going to vote
for him. I think I might vote for this guy again.
You know, he's good ideas.
He's strong on Chelish border security.
Wow, Captain, I hate to say it, but roll for initiative. Gosh.
She takes a bottle off the shelf and with just a flick of her thumb in one hand, uncorks it. Pours a very tall glass of brown liquor before she like thinks better of it, and then just like, takes a long draught straight from the bottle. Just glug, glug, glug. He's gone mad. He must be stopped. He's called for my death in the public square, calling me the ringleader of a coalition against him.
Well, I mean, he is right about that.
I mean, he is kind of right. Yes, I will say that he's not wrong.
He's a little
the
right.
Funny thing about it, but I'll tell you what, I've been working for years to route out Chelish spies to protect this entire corner of the world, the corner of the world that he controlled. And well, I've put to the end of my sword a fair share of those who wouldn't break, who wouldn't give names of fellow collaborators. And perhaps I might have just sussed out why. If they were perhaps working for Kurdak Bonefist, maybe he wanted the shackles to be invaded. He wanted the Chelish to destroy those who opposed him, like Hell Harbor or Drenchport, and maybe he sold off their lands through channels to the Chelish. I don't know, but it seems he doth protest too much my examinations of Chelish spies for these last few years. Yeah. Maybe he
that
wanted
would mean, but that would wanted, mean he wasn't nice.
He's
no.
Not Kurdak Bone nice.
Oh, yeah. Wait a minute, that doesn't add up. This isn't adding up.
Kurdak nice fist.
Oh no, Kurdak. Oh, you meant Kurdak. I thought you meant Durkak. That's his cousin. He runs the ice cream stand down the street from.
Yeah. And he is nice.
Oh, is Durkak nice palm?
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, good. Yeah. Not at all undead hand. Yeah.
You all
ice cream hand. You know what? I went there.
He's got like one of those little like hooks like in the Turkish ice cream where he flips it.
Oh yeah. No.
Oh, he's the most evil.
He's so tricky. He's a rogue. He's a rogue.
Well, he actually made a deal with a pit fiend that if someone ever grabs the cone before he does the little trick, his soul is immediately
sucked out.
Yeah. But he makes a ton of money on ice cream.
Ton of money.
It was honestly a pretty good deal.
Guys, can we make the rest of this campaign about ice cream?
I was about to say, you're saying I should make him into a half rogue, half wizard ice cream salesman
for
your fight. Okay, got it. Yeah, she's like, you all can make light of this all you would like, but it doesn't excite me. She takes another long swig from her bottle. That what I've been working on my entire life has been thrown away in the course of saving our friends' lives.
I mean, you had to know what was coming when we sailed north. This is, to be honest, the least I expected from the man who wanted to hide in his fort and hope that everything went his way while the Chelish plotted behind his back. He's doing what every man and who is more interested in power than sailing the seas does, and he's scared of losing it.
Well, the only thing to do, I suspect, is run, hide, sell our ships, die in some forgotten city on the edge of the inner sea under assumed names, perhaps start gardening stores.
Or
wineries.
Or we could employ one of my favorite forms of conflict resolution.
What be that, Honto?
Killing pirates.
Pirate murder and we shall go.
Are you saying we take this fight to Bonefist? We object to his objection. Give him the old Hurricane King to the face.
I mean, to be fair, I don't have a lot of choice in the matter. This is kind of a must do or, you know, lose my soul sort of situation.
I don't know what that means, but I suspect things happened on the deck of the Abigail's Fury.
I think Oz will just kind of like kick Cassius's boot and just hold up a finger to the tip of his snout.
Shh. Well, yes. I'm more referring to the soul of me, Creed.
Oh, okay.
Which is not running away from cowards like Bonefist.
He must have known. I suppose he either thought the Chelish would have killed us, or we might be going right into a trap if he knew it would force our hands to sail against him. He might want us to fight our fellow pirates, the lords that still he holds sway over, those who bar entrance into Hell Harbor. It's possible he wants several of his council dead, not just us.
Quite true.
I say we give it to him, though. We give him exactly what he wants. If we know that he wants another grand battle in the calm waters of Jeopardy Bay, I will raise every single sailing ship that has ever owed me a favor in these shackled seas, and I will sail straight into the heart of Fort Beryl. But do you recall those papers you took from Barnabas Harrigan that showed a secret set of back entrances into Fort Hazard?
Now you're talking my language.
I say we take that cutthroat's plans for our own, and we have you all kill a Kurdak Bonefist.
Now that is a grand plan.
3 days' time. We can't hold much longer than that and let them fortify and barricade the harbor more. 3 days' time, and I will get every single capable sailor that I can and crew the ships nearby.
We'll
have you infiltrate.
We'll challenge him to an arm wrestling match.
Oh,
cornered as he is, he won't be able to refuse.
Pick the right hand. You find that skeletal-handed son of a sea biscuit. You put your boots on his head, and perhaps if we can capture the king, we can force the other lords to stand down with no more bloodshed than needs be of our fellow lords. But I warn you all, if we're going to do this, it is all or nothing. It is victory or death. There's no turning back once we've gone down this route. If you're captured, you'll have your neck stretched or worse. So each of you will need once more to decide for yourself if you're willing to take that risk and make your peace. We will reconvene here the wee hours of the night, the last hour before morning, in a few days' time before an attack. We will do our best to bring down the hurricane on Fort Hazard.
Cassie stands up and is, and on that note, and maybe he like yoinks a bottle from the table. He's, I am going to go ruminate the best way I know how. And they saunters off with a bottle.
She goes over to Alaris and says, you should probably give the orders for your fleet to make ready. And yes, you sail north. I'll have the Endymion sail back to Hell Harbor, and I will sail west to Quint, and we will return here with the fleet that we will have to sail with. The final fleet for the pirate lords of the shackled seas. Right. So as you guys perhaps return to your ships, to the Tidebreaker, to the Spider Silk, and maybe make it away from Port Peril here, and you can go back to the Isle of Empty Eyes if you'd like, but maybe not too far out from that, you are pursued by another vessel, that of a set of sails inner sea sails configuration that you've seen before, and you find it flying under the flag of the Captain Pathfinder Stella Thane on board the Risen Albatross, who indeed waves you down from a distance and sails up alongside you before coming aboard and shaking hands with Cassius and Bartleby's there too, maybe? I don't know. I forget who she's good friends with, but she'll come over to you. Yeah, she'll come over to you, Honto, and say, might we have a word in private, good sir? I've found some things in Greenblood that I think need to be brought to your attention immediately.
In Greenblood?
Yes.
Well, apparently I've just lost my station, so I have plenty of time.
We've had word of what has happened in Port Peril, yes, and we are prepared to sail under the flag of Tessa Fairwind. But in the demilitarization and in the deweaponization of Greenblood, things are going quite well over the last few weeks. We've ousted, I think, the last of the slaver vestiges, and we've made it very known to the few ships that have come sailing into the harbor that they are no longer welcome there. It is, of course, a message we delivered after we liberated them of their cargo and gave their said cargo their weapons and their freedom. It is going very well, but we will need you back there after the fighting is done. The population for many years has been tied to the gladiatorial arena, and it would mean a lot if a former fighter were there to lead them through the next stages of what the city could be. But that's not what brings me here to you today. I was seeking paperwork on the crew that originally took you, Honto, this Captain Seaborn of the Chimera's Teeth, and well, we finally found the bill of sale in the archives, and the contract of ownership for both you and another Aruxi listed as Tepeu, is that right? Did you know this Tepeu?
Thing is that Honto wasn't just blowing hot wind as mm-hmm. it was. He doesn't know if he wants to know more.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not going to lie. Yes, I knew him well.
Well, we found the paperwork on your bills of sale to Greenblood on a black rock, and the paper trail goes up a great deal. There were cash flows coming all through the aisle, but much of it seemed indeed to be brought straight from Port Peril, straight from ships that we believe perhaps be under Fort Hazard's control. But that wasn't the odd thing here. We did not just find one bill of sale for Tepeu. Well, we found a second one as well. It was listed after his death, and indeed this receipt was given to Fort Hazard, to the Hurricane King's home isle. I think it might be known that, well, Greenblood did not let its best fighters keep dead for long, and it was known that they did sell some of their best ones out again as either slaves or bodyguards. I just wanted to tell you that it is very possible that this Tepeu might still be alive, and he might be somewhere in Fort Hazard.
I see.
So, if that be where you headed, well, good luck, and I just wanted you to know before you got there, and were afraid of what you saw, if you saw something that might have troubled you.
No, I'm not sure what prompted this research, but it's good to know. Thank you.
Will Honto give in? Will any of these characters give in to the vengeance that is due to them? Vengeance for the Saltfoot tribe? Perhaps for a return, will we find and see Tepeu in the future? Do they still live? Will the assault on Jeopardy Bay pay off, or will this spell curtains for the now cretinous crew? All this is a tale for another time here on Dead Men Roll No Crits, as we enter the final part of Book 6 of Skull and Shackles. Dum bum bum.
Literally years in the making.
From Hell's Heart. Get it? That's why the devil wants the heart. Hell's Heart. It's so cool. It's such a good thing to have.
It's gonna suck that
every battle against just, you know, the random pirates, Cassius is going to be like, and this one, nope. And this one, nope.
just chucking hearts.
Come get this one.
Poor, the Hurricane King is going to glamour himself.
Eris Mandius is going to be like, no. Stop it.
Stop calling my name for these false alarms.
Yeah, his head pops out of a small head-sized hole in the ground. He's just shakes his head, then it goes back down.
He showed up for the first couple. You know, he was like,
Kurdak.
So
he's like, listen, how about this? When you pull the heart out, if it's green means go. And say the name.
So the first 8 episodes of book 6. Have been basically all devil action.
You know what? I'm just going to mark it on your map.
Oh, I get a waypoint. Yeah.
The next part, the final part of the book, is a lot of port peril. I hope you guys are excited to go back to the pirate capital here.
It all began.
Basically one very long, fun dungeon crawl through Fort Hazard, and some of the stuff that I actually was very unhappy we never got to do in Pathfinder first edition, because there's some wild stuff that we'll get to see, you know, but you've already fought like kaiju turtles and things like that, so I don't know how much wilder it is, but there's some fun things.
Additional wild stuff.
And I get to make up like a super high level Hurricane King.
Oh, jeez.
We'll find out what happens when Cassius doesn't roll a natural 20 on the fortitude when he gets grasped by that bony hand.
Is it too late to take Juggernaut? Is like a
that's going to do it for this week's episode, guys. Thanks for playing with me.
Thank you, Patrick.
Listeners, thank you for listening. We will continue to conclude this podcast next week from Patreon Pirates Freebie Captains. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next week's episode of Jim Heroic Crits.